My name is Mohamed Chana. My hometown is Riyadh, and I'm currently based back here again. And my medium is seems to be always changing and evolving.
I'm Michelle Schifaletti, and you're listening to Thaqafat.
A storyteller and an illustrator, Mohamed Chana never shied away from change, constantly seeking new approaches to technique, mediums, and technology. From delicate ink on paper to large-scale experimental and technological installations, his work deals with the individual unit of thought and how it transforms into a systems of beliefs. Born and raised in Riyadh in the 1980s, Chana faced restrictions that he rejected from a young age, forcing him to further explore elements of redactions and censorship in his youth. Chana wrote, illustrated, and self-published his own comic books in a time where comics were confiscated or censored. He has done residencies and exhibited around the world, including in Germany, Saudi Arabia, Austria, the UAE, among many others. Mohamed, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So let's begin with your upbringing. So you grew up in Riyadh. Tell us about your experience growing up in Riyadh and how that kind of shaped you today.
I mean, growing up in Riyadh was obviously from a young age, I kind of became very aware that I was in the wrong place, or that was the sense that I had. And I think that was a kind of a weird thing to realize from a young age, that I wasn't supposed to be in Riyadh for some reason. And I kind of accepted that I was out of place. Sort of from different, that I realized my family weren't necessarily had cultural roots, and we didn't have uncles and aunts and grandparents mm-hmm. that were Saudi. So my parents immigrated to Saudi Arabia in the 70s, and they actually had me a year before the entire family became naturalized and we became Saudi. So we didn't quite, I didn't grow up surrounded by kind of these cultural references. I remember the first time my mom sent me to school in Riyadh, in Madaris Riyadh, like she dressed me up in the most ridiculous ways. So she had me in a black bow tie, red suspenders, a white buttoned up shirt, black velvet pants tucked into knee-high socks, black shiny shoes with my blue and yellow German backpack. And so I went from like a kind of a kindergarten school that had American teachers, and it was kind of mixed boys and girls, and I was suddenly literally like displaced and placed into typical Saudi Riyadh mm-hmm. school system. So when I walked into school, I was surrounded by 600 only boys. There were no more female teachers, and I took two steps into that world dressed the way I was, and I had this new sensation of not belonging, and it was like an overwhelming kind of panic that I didn't fit in. I was sorely standing out within this cultural context, and a few steps into that world, I was bullied. Like I was, you know, two older kids grabbed the shirt my mom had so carefully selected for me that morning, and they kind of threw me to the ground and said, "Tomorrow you dress like this," and they gestured to their white thobe, and everybody was dressed in a white thobe. So there was no awareness, like with my mom or my family, about what, you know, constitutes being Saudi.
Right.
And I was very upset by that experience. You know, it kind of left a lasting impression.
How do you feel like those experiences shaped you today as an artist? Because I feel like art and creativity is an outlet in some ways.
I mean, in school, like most kids in school, I was beginning to explore this, enjoyment of art. And we didn't necessarily have a serious art experience, but as younger kids, we were allowed to attend an art class, but my memory from those classes were that the teacher would instruct us to strike a line through the neck of anything that I was depicting that had life. So a character, a living depiction of something. So the act of, you know, depiction of life was forbidden, as you know, we were told only God has dominion over creation. So what was happening, it was a sort of like an assault, a decapitation of the characters that were very alive in my mind. And also like this offloading of guilt, you know, like if you continue to draw characters, you're going to end up in hell. So I had to make a choice from a young age. Was I going to continue to be an artist and write stories and create, or was I going to let go of that? And I don't necessarily think that I resolved it, but I decided to continue to illustrate. So that restriction, I'm very grateful of at that age, because it fine-tuned my work and I became to appreciate the line, not as a tool to decapitate, but as a line to create.
That's an interesting point, because I hear a lot of people say that creativity can't flourish in restricted environments. Where I actually disagree with that, because I think that limitations force people to utilize creativity. I don't want to say more, but perhaps in a different way.
It's essential, I think. I think if you have limitless options and everything, there's no resistance against anything, then you don't exactly know where to squeeze through. So it's very essential, and it's one of the most important things, like I think, to develop passion from a young age. And not so maybe passion is the wrong word, it's kind of an overused word, but I think it's more like an obsession. It's like a black hole that develops from a young age that you spend the rest of your life trying to feed, and it's never, you're never able to satiate that hole. It keeps demanding more.
I know that you made comic books starting at a young age as some type of a creative outlet. Talk a little bit about your interest in comics, where that came from, and how that kind of related to maybe pushing you in a path towards the artistic realm.
I was fascinated with comic books from a young age, because I quickly realized it was a self-contained medium that I could work with on my own. It's unlike making a film.
Right.
I don't need an editor. I don't need an actor or an actress. Like I could produce something. I could tell the story. I could visualize it. I could print it. I could distribute it even. And that kind of power over the medium was, you know, interesting. Or intoxicating in terms of self-reliance. But growing up specifically, comic books were rare. So we had a trickling in of comic books, and they were often redacted. You know, they would be markered all over certain visuals or images, especially if the character was female, or any kind of inappropriate symbols were deemed to be on display. So sometimes entire pages were ripped off, because it was easier just to rip out the page than to censor. So this kind of act of, again, like the drawing of a line across the neck of creation, kind of like pushed the imagination to fill in the gap. So what was taken away from that page? What was beyond or behind that smudge of marker black ink? What was it hiding? So I had to fill in the story, right? So it permeated into my work till today. And I only started to understand that recently, is that the line was not about decapitation, but creation. This, the inking or the redaction of meaning or visuals, you know, the whole world existed under the ink.
How did you then transition from, you know, I know you worked in somewhat of a corporate environment at some point, and then how did you transition to kind of being an artist on your own and really going out there as a serious artist and kind of making this your main career?
I never let go of the narrative, the storytelling, the comic book, the visualization. I always self-published and produced comic books as I kind of left Saudi and I pursued jobs in advertising, which were really just a means to remain outside of Saudi Arabia. At some point, I decided I had to leave and learn from other people, because being self-taught in Saudi Arabia, you kind of hit a ceiling very quickly where you're not being challenged. You're not surrounded by people who are, which was specifically my experience growing up, that were kind of challenging you creatively. Neither could you find them. I'm sure there were at the time, but there was no social media, there was no internet, and there was no kind of outlet. There was not an exhibition or a gig happening, and you kind of went and met other people. So it was hard to find on an earth at that time. So I decided I had to leave, and I sort of got a job in advertising, literally by just showing the creative director in Dubai at the time a comic book I had finished. I told him I've never done anything in advertising, but I kind of taught myself to do this, and I can learn how to do advertising. So he hired me. And one funny story is he one moment, there was my first week or two in the agency. And I remember my creative director at the time, his name was Ed Jones. He was a great guy. And he was in the boardroom. The client was there. I think there were 20 people waiting, and he was waiting to present to them. And I was printing out the ads so he could present. And it was my first presentation. So I literally knocked on the door. I came in and I snuck, you know, I came close to him, and I showed him the thing, the layout. And I said, is this logo big enough in front of the client? And he gave me the look of death, like, I am going to murder you right now and then present your corpse to the client. So I had to learn very quickly, and it was a steep learning curve.
So talk about why you then decided to come back to Riyadh in 2015. What kind of led you to want to return, or feel like it was the right move to return for your own artistic growth?
I mean, once I felt like I, you know, had established roots overseas, and I sort of migrated to Australia. So I felt like I could travel easier. I wasn't sort of restricted, because if you were just an artist in Saudi Arabia at the time, one of the reasons I left is I couldn't travel anymore. I couldn't get a visa to travel. I couldn't open a bank account because I wasn't recognized as someone who had a job, not even as a freelancer. So I was rapidly feeling like I was being trapped. So when I finally left and I had set up roots overseas, I quickly, you know, saw the truth. I had peered behind the curtain of what a corporate job is and what advertising is about. And even before I left, I was like doing comic cons, and I was printing my own comic books and sort of traveling, and it was becoming really intoxicating. It was that feeling of truly knowing your authentic self and living that. And there was no way that I could clock in and work and be paid for my time for someone else's dream. So I left. I left. I went to Europe and I started to exhibit, and I quickly went broke, and there was nothing really happening. And I decided I would come back to Saudi to catch my breath and figure out my next steps, mm-hmm. because there was no way I was going to go back to Australia and get a job.
I want to talk about your work. I have my own idea of this, but to you, what's the common thread in all of your work? If somebody were to say, what characterizes your work, what would you say to them?
You can't do me like this.
Sorry, this is a rough question.
I mean, it is a rough question because it's like a constant trying to understand what's driving what you're doing. And it's not an easy question to answer because, you know, I had a solo in 2016, which was like the beginning of sort of transitioning into contemporary art. And that came from a big struggle, right? Because my comic books that I was producing weren't necessarily a comic book. So I remember I was in Berlin and I had my comic book with me, and I saw this comic book shop, and I walked in and I asked the guy, you know, in very bad German, what who's someone I could show this comic book to that I've made to see if this is okay to be in your shop. And he said, well, he said, let's talk in English. And then he said, I'm the person. And he looked at the comic book and he said, you know, it's really an art book. And I wasn't shocked by that because I've always existed kind of not a non-committal existence between bubbles. So I was neither committing to language or culture, and producing things that were neither a comic book because I was self-taught. So it wasn't necessarily ticking all the formal boxes of things, you know. But the same comic book, if I would take it to a gallery, they would say it's a comic book.
Right.
So I didn't even know where to display this book that I was, or this comic book that I produced. If I had taken it to a bookshop, I myself wouldn't know what genre to place it, you know, within.
Right.
So it took me a while to accept that I'm sort of not treading a line that can be easily defined. Because there are no examples that I'm existing within. What's your theory?
No, I think your work, the topics, each one has their own story, obviously, but I think there's a theme that you have a narrative to tell. And I think that no matter, like, you know, if you think about your work on tribalism versus your recent work, which is about in Alola, all of them have a narrative. And it's, I don't want to say it's the same narrative because it's not. They manifest differently in each piece, but I see your work as almost a search for identity, a larger narrative about you're searching for something. And I think each piece tells a different story about what you're searching for. Maybe it's what your art is searching for. But they all have a curious nature about it. It's kind of searching for an identity or searching for a story or searching for even a history.
This is very good. I'm going to update my bio right after this podcast.
Do you have a favorite piece?
Not necessarily a favorite piece, but some kind of works that had a process that was close to the heart. Things that in most of my work, like not knowing what the outcome is going to be is important. So even with a Desert X work, even though it was quite demanding and labor intensive, it was planned up to a point, but I always like to stop short and sort of respond to the location and that's what happened. Like we found a very peaceful spot where you can't hear a single sound at the end of this installation. And we decided to lead the audience to that point for those who chose to follow the path to its conclusion. I enjoy not knowing the ending of things. And if I know too much how things are meant to end, and there's too much of a blueprint for how things need to look like in the end, I sort of lose interest. And for most of these works, like once I've had that eureka moment or I've reached the conclusion of that narrative, my relationship with the work ends.
A lot of your work also deals with, I would say, topics that are focused on your surroundings. So I know you have some work that talks about a post-oil future and Arab colonization. How does your surrounding and environment affect your desire to create?
I think it's a constant influence for sure. And even though I left and I thought maybe I've disconnected from this world that I grew up in, it kind of never left. It kind of traveled with me. And I, to be honest, like I quickly got very bored in Australia as well. It's very beautiful. People are amazing. It's very, and I just felt at some point that it wasn't, I missed that cultural tension or that social tension that was bubbling below the surface. So now being back here and being in the midst of this kind of renaissance that's happening here and re-meeting these different creatives and artists that were hidden when I was growing up, and discovering that there are so many people like me who were kind of locked away in their bedrooms developing their own skills.
What is that like for you? Because growing up, you in many ways felt alone in this journey to being kind of creative. And now you're seeing people who I assume are around the same age as you, who grew up in a similar environment to you, emerging and also using their creative mediums to express themselves, how they grew up.
I feel like a very strong sense of camaraderie, and honestly, like very proud of what I'm seeing and being part of this. And like, I really want to help out, and I really want to, you know, see it succeed. And there's a lot of challenges happening right now. There's a lot of pressure to be at a certain level in the Saudi art scene, and we're not exactly set up for it yet. Like, we're sort of getting opportunities to produce very ambitious pieces of work, exhibiting next to the biggest of names in the art world from around the world. But at the same time, we're trying to set up our studios. We're trying to get a table to work on. We're trying to figuring out local methods of production and fabrication and so on. So these issues are happening simultaneously. So the challenge is great.
When you create your art, I mean, your solo exhibit, which was exhibited at Ather Gallery, correct, in Jeddah. Talk a little bit about how you decided your medium. How do you decide kind of what format your art's going to take? For example, using charcoal, or al-ola was obviously larger than life. How do you kind of go through that process? I mean, it always fascinates me.
It's a pure belief in the subconscious. And sort of, it's a little bit of a, I wouldn't say hoarding, but going around, and then there's something that you're attracted to, and it's kind of, it's attraction. And you kind of take some of that thing that you're attracted to and you bring it back to your space. And it's around you. And sometimes you don't know why it's there and why in that size and why in that kind of state. And it allows for accidents, it allows for discoveries. And I think that's the beauty of not knowing what you're doing. So the more you PDF and plan something on paper, the less room there is for finding something unexpected. And I used to do that with my comic books. So I've kind of carried that through into my work. So in my comic books, I would place my character, who was me, in the beginning of a very awkward or challenging moment in a story. And I wouldn't necessarily know, there would be no ending, there would be no script, but I would sort of travel and illustrate the book with the character as we figure it out together. So I was reading the story, I was experiencing the story, it would end when I had found the moment that this is the end of the story, and it made sense. It was the right moment to end the story. And it was the moment of discovery as well, or a learning moment. And that kind of extended to my work here. So the Black Pipes from Desert X was just me going around, the industrial area here in Riyadh, and finding these very thin line-like black pipes that I realized that spoke to me, and I collected like 20 of them and I brought them back to the studio. I didn't know what they were and why I was interested in them. Then I realized I could fit them together, and then they had a certain bend to them. And I started piling them up in the corner of the house outside. And I took a few pictures, and that was the beginning of several works that came from using those pipes. And then I realized that, you know, a lot of people wanted to say, is this work about oil, because the pipes are a byproduct of oil? But it, to me, it was a sculptural sketch. It was me drawing in 3D. These were not necessarily PVC pipes. They were lines of ink.
First of all, I think everyone wants to know, are you still making comics?
That's a very sensitive topic. Yeah, I think what happened in 2016, you know, when Ether called me and said, you know, we want you to have a solo. I didn't understand why they want me to have a solo, because I think the last time I did something with Ether, they allowed me to paint the stairwell leading between Gallery 1 and Gallery 2. So all these like amazing artists were exhibiting inside the gallery, and I was stuck outside the gallery in the stairwell. And I remember that time, all these guests, the VIPs who were kind of visiting the gallery, were sort of using the stairwell to transition from Gallery 1 and Gallery 2. And I would be standing in the stairwell, and nobody would be looking at anything. They would just be, it was noise. Walking. Like they were just walking, talking to each other, kind of breathing through the staircase, huffing and puffing. And it's, I realized like the context is important. And I realized that I existed again in between two things. I wasn't in the gallery. I was kind of like in this transitional space, as I've been in my entire life, apparently. So, and people are not tuned in. This is a stairwell. This is not a place for me to tune in to find something. And I kind of recognize that moment as the necessity of transitioning into a space. And I still not sure that was the right choice. If I should have stayed in the stairwell and forced the issue, is a term that kind of echoes in my mind till now. So when I had the opportunity to exhibit at Ether, I remember like I literally had to kill my character to free myself from the comic book format and the illustrative format in the style that I had developed. And I felt an immense guilt when I did that. And the work I did in Ether in 2016 called Children of Yam, it's the story of the fourth son of Noah, Prophet Noah, who in the biblical and the Quranic story is a story of a figure who was punished because and allowed to drown because he didn't follow his father's doctrine. So I did a whole show where I imagined a different outcome for this character, that he actually survived the flood. And his offspring, the children of Yam, were the immigrants of the world, or those who were on the outside of things, outside of the ark. So I imagined he did survive, and he was an interesting character because he didn't follow that specific bubble that his father wanted him to step into. But in the process of doing that work, I remembered that what I've done is, which is part of the guilt, is I pulled back. I literally moved away from the characters, and they became small and amorphous figures traversing this landscape. But I could no longer see the character close up in detail. So I hovered away, I floated away, and I started to see things from a distance. And that was the work. I didn't know why I did that, but it was a mental state where I had moved away literally and physically from the character.
I want to just quickly touch upon the creative scene, because you mentioned how you really want to give back, and now you feel like obviously a lot has changed. Thinking back to growing up and kind of where you are now, where do you think the opportunities and the challenges are for young people that want to be in the creative scene, that want to partake in art? Where do you see that for people now in the region?
It's kind of hard to comment on other people's journeys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think for the younger generation here in Saudi, the experience of being in Saudi is completely different to my experience. And hopefully they will never have to re-experience that kind of state here. I think the younger generation doesn't need my advice. I think they're very resilient, and I'm very kind of impressed, constantly impressed by what's happening. And this podcast is, you know, a manifestation of that kind of new energy and new spirit, and what you're doing as well kind of fits in with this whole manifestation of creativity in new and unexpected ways. So I'm actually more interested in learning. I don't assume that I have the answers, right? So I remember, like, there's a festival happening and they were asking us about community engagement. Like, how do we engage with the community? And it was a tough question to answer because the art community is still in a state of putting itself together and engaging with itself. And that needs to be cemented and clear and established before it can give to the community. I can't give to the community if I'm still setting up my space and trying to understand what is it for me to give.
Moving forward, what are your goals? I know that you take a free form approach and you let things kind of happen organically, but if you were to say kind of what you want to see for yourself as an artist moving forward or as a creative, what would that be?
I mean, personally for me is like finding that authenticity and joy and kind of, you know, this connection between the work and who you are is important, and it's I'm on the way. But beyond me, it's about creating a space here in the studio in Riyadh to bring people in, bring friends in, and it's not exactly about the work, it's about how you get there and the time you spend. Who are you surrounded by while you're thinking about the work? Who's in that memory archive as you're about to head out into the desert and produce work? Even though I'm extremely antisocial in a way, but the work and talking about the work and the kind of the love of the work is what kind of brings me out of my shell to travel, to meet people, to talk to people, or to do a podcast.
Mohanad, I have one last question for you, and that's, what does culture mean to you?
Oh, you told me about this.
I gave you a heads up.
The gist of what I thought about that question was, it's a very distant thing, like a skyline of a city that I'm kind of observing from an island in isolation. Like, I'm not committing to the city. I really understand the skyline. I understand the lights. I can hear the sounds, but I don't want to be in the middle of it.
Hannah, thank you so much for joining today. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
I hope everyone enjoyed today's episode with Mohanad. I think Mohanad is really the true definition of an artist, and I've been following his work for years, so it was such a pleasure for me to have a chance to speak with him. If you'd like to learn more about his work, you can find him on Instagram at mohanad.shono. And until next time, when we continue to connect to the culture, Masarama.